Welcome to Pardes Parsha Podcast with Rav Landes, the podcast series from the Pardes Institute of Jewish Studies. I'm Rachel Isaacs, a Pardes student and your host for today. A chill has just entered the air on the streets of Jerusalem as autumn makes itself known. We look forward to learning some Torah with you today. Thank you for tuning in. Today's shiur is about Parshat Noach. A couple of brief announcements, and then we'll turn it over to Rav Landes. Your participation and feedback is vital for the success of the podcast series. Please send us comments on the episode, where you live, and how you heard about us. Send your email to podcast@pardesusa.org. Thank you. There's a handout sheet available for this podcast. It's optional, but helpful. It's available via www.pardes.org.il/podcast/podcast if you live in the UK. That's it. And now Rav Landes, the director and Rosh Yeshiva of the Pardes Institute. Rav Landes?
Thank you. Well, it is colder this parsha as well, parsha of Noach. As we know, Noah and the flood. And the story is so overwhelming. The story has such incredible proportions that we often react with it, either that this is the first disaster saga, the first large screen movie that could be filmed, and we are flooded by those images. And kids love it. Or we respond the other way. Again, with kids, we make it cute, and we focus on the dove, and we talk about the beauty. And before that, cute scenes in our mind of the animals, twosies by twosies, coming up. And if you look closely in the parasha, you see there's more. And this just takes over everything, this story of Noah. But there are two other stories that take place afterwards. There is living after destruction. And that's the story of Noah and his children. And how do you rebuild society? And it's an uneven story in terms of success. There's plenty of drama there. And then there's one other story that in and of itself has a great image for society. And that's the story of the Tower of Babel. It's a fantastic image. But at the same time, and it's an image about living after one destruction, and not just living as a family, but living as society, a full society. But the story has its peculiarities. First of all, it's only a few verses in the Bible. Let's just read a few of them, just to place this in context. And coming after the story of Noah, we're just so tired. We are just so exhausted. We've been swimming. We've been treading water. We've been on the boat. And then after the soap opera story of Noah and his own family, that this story sometimes is put on the side. The few verses. Vahi kol ha'aretz safa achat u'dvarim achadim. And the whole earth was of one language and of one speech. Dvarim says one speech, or more literally, one words or a few words. Vayhi b'nos am mikedem, and it came to pass as they journeyed from the east that they found a plain in the land of Shinar, and they dwelt there. And they said one to another, Vayomru ish el re'ehu, Hava nil b'na levenim, let us make bricks, a lot of pud there, nil b'na levenim. Let's whiten out those bricks. Let's forge them with good fire. In fact, it says, v'nisrafa l'israfa, and burn them thoroughly through so that they will be strong. So they'll be strong is my addition. And they had bricks for stone, and slime they had for mortar. And once they were able to take care of that technology, vayomru, they come to another conclusion. Hava nivnel lanu ir u'migdal, V'rosho v'ashamayim, v'na'ase lanu shem, pen nafutz al p'nei kol ha'aretz. And they said, come, let us build a city and a tower whose top may reach unto heaven. and let us make for us a name, shame in Hebrew, a name, lest we be scattered abroad upon the face of the whole earth. God's not happy with this. The Lord comes down to see the city and the tower, which the children of man were building. The Lord said, behold, this people is one. They have all one language, and this they begin to do, and now nothing will be withheld from them, which they have schemed to do. Come, let us go down, and Bilbel, let us confound their language, that they may not understand one another's speech. And the Lord does this. And the end of the story, you know, they become scattered upon the face of the earth. And that's the end. The image is great. But the real question is, or one of the real questions for sure, question for today is, what was wrong in the plan? They had the technology down pat. One person is speaking to another. I want to make the pitch to you that they were doing things right. I mean, they're building. They're speaking to each other. They have a goal, a tower to reach to the sky. On the face of it, it seems to be a very worthy direction. Why is it that in the biblical story that God is upset? And why in the biblical story God says, let's get rid of this one language. Let's change it around for them. What are the potential problems here? What's the problem, the plan, as I said? And I have five or six ways of looking at this with you. I didn't originate them, but I think they're interesting in this time of bringing the world together. The comments of our ancient masters may have something to contribute. The first one we'll look at is the Rashbam. Rashbam, as you know, is a medieval exegete, the grandson of Rashi. He was always very carefully enunciating a pshat, another P word for our Pardes Parsha podcast, I should say. So we have his pshat cast. And what he gives us as pshat is he says, you know, we know earlier in the Bible that it says that that human beings were given a charge. They were told, Peru urvu imilu et haaretz. Be fruitful, multiply, and you shall fill the land, fill the earth. And that's in chapter 1, verse 28. And they have decided on a specific spot. They found a plain where to dwell. And they said, we better live together, lest we spread out too far. Yeah, I think, you know, if you want to, you could read the Rashbam as a protest against urban sprawl. I just come back from a whirlwind tour of the United States, and urban sprawl can be a pretty ugly thing. I'm not exactly sure that's what the Rashbam had in mind. I think more what he says is, but there's a covenantal desire. There's a need to be able to move out, not to take yourself from within, to be able to for the human beings to find and to adventure and to explore and to discover. And what's wrong with this plan is that the plan takes away from this grandeur and glory that is part of being the human being. And therefore, God, when he gives them a different language, when God scatters them out, it's not so much as a punishment, the way I understand Rashbam. It's not so much as a punishment, but it's more like this is what they need in order to fulfill the covenantal destiny of being human. Curiosity, discovery, challenge, exploration, moving out. God's not interested they be a species of wimps that just need to stay together. In the Rashbam's explanation, it seems that they're always talking to each other, advising each other. They're withholding from each other. They're restraining each other. And therefore, the Rashbam says, you know, that this for God is not human enough. This is a problem. And thus is the Rashbam's explanation. Let's see what else we could cover and discover on the page of our great exegetes. This another explanation is that we should come into that of Rashi. Rashi is more bold than his grandson, even in explanation, although those grandsons ingenious, but more bold. Rashi says that they were safa achat, they were one language, devarim achadim, they were of one mind. And what was this mind? They decided upon themselves. They said, why have we taken upon ourselves or accepted the tyranny of the heaven? Why is it that we are limited to this earth? This is a dialectically opposite, fully opposite of the interpretation of the Rashbam. Why is it that we're just limited to below? Na'aleh l'rakia, let us ascend to the very heavens and let us do battle there. This is the alpha, macho, male, writ large, and this is their problem, according to Rashi, that they want to go up to heaven, they want to make for themselves a name, and the name is that the heavens itself will belong to them. There is no place for God, there is no place for anyone else, it's only for them. And God says, well, there's another thing coming for you. That's the second explanation. But Rashi offers another, which would be our third. And this is very interesting. Rashi says, once every several millennia, the firmaments of heaven go through a climatic change. They begin to melt. A kind of universal global warming, just as happened in the days of the flood. Ba'u v'naseh lo smuchot. Let us go up and build these towers, which will be pillars upon which the very heaven, the very firmaments of heaven, can rest. And this explanation, it's not just using technology to build the tower. Technology is there for the tower to actually change the cycle of the earth itself. We will have a technological correction to the way that the world goes, in which the world works. We ourselves can change this. We are there not to do battle, but we are there in a very interesting way, so that the world, the universe, can rely upon us. Let's review the explanations we have so far. We have three so far. What Rashbam says is they were too timid. They decided to confine themselves to one spot. And by confining themselves to one spot, they have given up, the daring do, which is part of the human condition, a part of the human command of being fruitful and multiplying and filling the earth, and therefore that was their problem. The second and third explanations come from Rashi. And here, Rashi offers the possibility, as the verse said, they want to go up and make for themselves a name, they want to go up to the very heaven, they want to do battle. There's not a place in the universe for the two of us, they say, regarding God. It's us or God, no one else. No one else but us. We're ready to take this to the end. We're ready to do battle. And the third explanation, also offered by Rashi, it's a very interesting explanation in our time, is that they had a queasiness, a uncertainty about how the world, how the universe was going to act. They saw cycles within their, of rain, of warmth, of coldness. And they said, we have to find a way in which the whole world can rest upon the pillars, the towers that we can create. I would submit to you that is not doing battle with God, but that's also a supplanting of where God is. So far, three of our explanations. There's a fourth explanation offered by Rabbi David Kimchi, in which he says that their desire was actually a worry regarding what would happen to them if they spread forth. If they spread forth, they would lose their identity. If they spread forth, they would lose not only their identity, but their very sense of being. They knew that it was impossible to stay all together in one spot. But they figured that socially they could come to some conclusion, some answer, some form of social economic arrangement in which by willpower, by agreements, by new forms of habitation. Here we have the first condominiums, first high-density living. They could all live together on one plane. And therefore, they build this tower, lest we scatter ourselves forth, even though they know that they will scatter eventually. But maybe, yes, we can will it. Yes, we can create it. Yes, we have a new way. What you have here in the commentaries is a sense here, especially this last one, is the desire in the Tower of Babel to change one's natural way of being. Whether it is to fight against nature will be dependent upon us, we will change nature. Whether it is to fight against human nature, and the human nature by keeping people together when people really need to find different paths. Whether it is an exaltation of one's human nature to a degree that there's no other place but only the human, in other words, they'll do battle with God. Or whether it's to fight the fact of nature that we can't always fully be together. And that there are paths and different paths for us to go. And that's that last notion, the Radak. Nachmanides, the Ramban, comes to us with a fifth explanation. And his explanation is that they would build this tower in order of Anasel Lanu Shein, that we should make for us a name. The notion of making a name, as I understand, is their own insecurity about who they are. The only way that they can prove who they are is to raise this building, raise this tower, place their name at the top of this tower, and like all others who put their name on top of some great construction. Beforehand, it's as if they didn't exist, and only now they exist. This is called, according to Nachmanides, cutting away from the very foundations of the world. When you put yourself forward as the only thing, you really become a no-thing. You become really a nothing. There's really nothing else left. All you have left is that shame. All you have left is that name. And what does the name mean when there's no audience but really yourself? It's a victory, but it's a very hollow victory. Is there any other way of looking at it? Well, there's a contemporary author, Menachem Sion, who I studied with, my grandfather. And he says that the thing that's going on here may be a little bit of a combination of the other commentaries, but with a special spin. He also repeats the problem that it's hard to see exactly what they were doing wrong. But he sees that in the very process of having one language and having one thought. He warns against the totalitarian frame of mind, which appeals to having a great name, the grandeur, the glory, all totalitarian societies lift up everyone within society, because you will be greater, because we as the group will be greater. No transcendent purpose, no spiritual purpose, no greater societal purpose than the lifting of the we, and the we is only who's within this group and no one else. And by doing this, by doing it in this way, we are the only ones who are worthy of existence. We are the only ones who are present, who deserve this name, this peace, Am Echad v'Safa Achat L'Kulam, that we will be one nation, one language, to the exclusion of all other things. So it's the Tower of Babel, therefore, was not just a technological game. It wasn't only the act of insecurity. It was the act of total domination. Domination, self-imposed domination, but domination nonetheless towards the goal of self-exaltation, which in the end, always leads to the tyranny of those who think differently, to the tyranny of those who want to speak differently, to the tyranny of those who are not like-minded. Those who are not like-minded become seditious. They are labeled as such, I should say. Those who speak a different language, perhaps a poetic language, a different thought pattern, become those who are not like us and become the other. So the Tower of Babel is at the same time an amazing feat of technological sweep, but it becomes the narrowing of the human vision. The higher they build, the less the human becomes. In the story of Noah and the flood, we say that the world was filled with chamas, the world was filled with violence. And God said, we have to start again. In the story of the Tower of Babel, human beings are saying, we can't live with nature as it is, we have to improve on it. One of Rashi's explanations. We can't live with the social norms of people just moving in different directions. We can't live with that, and therefore we have to force people to be together. We can't live with our own frailty, therefore we have to fight against heaven. Or we can't live, and this is the last explanation of the Menachem Tzion, the explanation I really want to leave you with, we can't live with difference. We have to have one language, and we have to have one thought pattern, and we have to incessantly keep ourselves occupied with building for only building's sake, which is a case in which we don't build, but which we actually destroy. The Tower of Babel is a story in which the sin, as it were, does not have to be explicit. The sin is not the moral failing of a particular act, a particular deed, which is ugly or heinous. It's basically an orientation towards life, which is narrow, which is constraining, which is limiting, which is, in the end, unnatural and inhuman and not humane. And so the Tower of Babel becomes our story. And with different language comes the potential of conflict, but with different language comes the possibility of different ways of singing, of different poetry. With different thoughts become different ways of exploring the universe. The goal will be to find the sharing and the translation of language, not the tyranny of one language. And so the parsha for this week, I want to thank you very much as you look and as you find other possibilities in this parsha.
Thank you, Rabbi Landes. Please tell your friends about this podcast series, and please let us know your thoughts and comments. Send us email via podcast@pardesusa.org. The producer of this episode was Robbie Grossman. Shalom and goodbye from Jerusalem.